Hello, St. Andrews. We're back with How the Sausage is Made. It's kind of a special episode here. So we have Pastor Matt, and usually used to hearing someone say, and Pastor Ethan, but we don't have Pastor Ethan. Pastor Ethan and Ren are preparing to have a baby number two, so we're praying for them that all goes well. But I have with me today as my special guest, because I'm here at Camp Arcadia, and the other dean, the other presenter this week is, I have come to realize, the most interesting man in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it is Pastor Ken Chitwood. And Ken, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. And just so you know, this is going to go out to dozens of people.
Well, hello, dozens of people. Hello, Pastor Matt. It's good to be here today. I'm Ken Chitwood. I call myself a professional religion nerd. Yes. And I do that in three different ways. I'm a scholar of religious studies and Islamic studies in particular. I work at a university in Bavaria, Germany. I'm a journalist who covers all types of religious traditions. You can find some of my writing in Christianity Today or Sojourner. Some of you might have come across those magazines. And then, I'm an LCMS pastor. And as some have described me, a theologian without borders, which means I work across multiple contexts and communities around the world.
And it's true. I mean, just in talking with you, the number of places you were. In fact, when I picked you up at the airport the other day, I picked you just come in from Mexico City. You've been there for a couple months, right?
Indeed. Yeah, I've been there on the road for 2.5 months and have been in Mexico for 8 weeks. Yeah,
that is absolutely wild. So we're here, and also his very delightful wife, Paula, is here too, which is it's just so cool to meet them and be with them. But I'm asking him to help me out here, because I get great ideas when I just talk about some of these things, and Pastor Ethan and I talk about the sermons. But again, I think it's a legit excuse. Having a baby is a legit excuse not to appear on How the Sausage is Made. So I'm going to give him a pass.
Yeah.
But we're in the summer sermon series called the Summer of Psalms. And by the way, we spell summer P-S-U-M-M-E-R.
Cute.
Okay. Thank you.
I like it.
Thank you for that. But we're doing Psalm 130, which is a short psalm. And one of the things that's interesting about this psalm is that it comes from a little larger section of 15 psalms, which are called the Psalms of Ascent. And it's kind of interesting. And my study of it has kind of led me to realize it's you're always talking about going up to Jerusalem. And then from Jerusalem, you're always going up to the temple. So as you're pilgriming into the city, or as you're heading up to the temple, you would stop and recite these psalms, or sing these psalms, probably more than likely. You had a chance to look at Psalm 130. What are some of your initial just like gut reactions to Psalm 130?
Well, the first thing I hit, like even before the psalm begins, is exactly what you just shared. And I pictured this moment when people are coming together in Jerusalem and heading up to the Temple Mount for the high holiday, whichever one of those it was going to be. And even, you know, in the intertestamental period between the Hebrew scriptures and the New Testament, or the Gospels and the time of Jesus, I mean, the Jewish or the proto-Jewish people were spread across the Mediterranean world, right? And they were coming, speaking different languages, wearing different clothes, coming from different cultures. They were different people.
Yeah.
A Jewish man in Brooklyn is different than a Jewish man in Berlin, who is different than a Jewish man in Jerusalem, right? Today, and it would have been the same in the past. And these Song of Ascents were songs of unity. Of the traveling community who were heading up to the temple. And by singing these songs together, no matter what culture or background or language they had when they arrived, knit them together. So when they arrived at the temple, they were a people.
That's so cool. And that's such a beautiful image of, hey, there might be a lot of stuff they don't necessarily have in common, but boy, when you start singing that, I know how to jump right in.
Yeah. And I mean, isn't it the same today, right? Like, no matter what culture or place your background from, you hear a certain song, whether it's a hymn, if you're coming from a liturgical tradition, or like a Hillsong song, those things are all over the world. Or if it's a T-Swizz song, Taylor Swift,
yeah. You know,
people come together around common music. Right?
Absolutely. I think the what you made me think of is a couple times I've been in settings where there've been a lot of people from different denominations. just start singing "Holy, Holy, Holy."
Yeah,
and everybody jumps in, and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful thing. So that's a very helpful image for this. But as we're looking at the content, I have used this so often, like at ordinations, installations, I use it at hospital beds, and it's the line, "If you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, therefore you are feared." And so that to me is just something that just rolls off the tongue for me. But it's good to look at it in its entire context. And so as you're looking at this, is there a word, is there a passage, is there something that just kind of pops out at you?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of turn is an important one that you just called out. I was taught when I was going through Greek training, Hebrew training by Dr. Mark Brighton at Concordia University in Irvine. He said that we need to watch out for theologically significant buts. And this is, you know, one of them is "If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand?" But and those buts hit hard, and we can sometimes wash right over these conjoining words, these ifs and ands and all that, but they are just as theologically significant as things like depths or iniquities or, you know, that kind of what we now might think of as Christianese language that we're all used to rolling off the tongues, but these ands and buts are significant too. So
yes.
I always kind of stick on those. They tend to pop out to me pretty quick.
Well, that was a brilliant thing that you were taught. And that's a great thing to look for those things, because it does take things in a different direction.
Yeah.
That word "but" can really change a lot of things. I remember, you know, in high school, going out with a girl and then asking her if she want to go out again, and she said, "I had a wonderful time. It was a wonderful evening,
right.
but I'd rather not go out with you again." So.
I reckon I heard that a little bit more than you, Matt. But I certainly know what you're talking about.
So it's a powerful thing. The two things, and I would love to get your thoughts on two things that kind of strike me. One is just the beginning of it. It's "out of the depths I cry to you," and I think in our culture we come into the idea of depths. We're down in the depths, we're down in the dumps, we're depressed, we're you know, lost our job, whatever, and those are legitimate depths. But this is a depth of like my own doing, because at the end it says he's gonna the Lord forgive Israel for all their sins, redeem Israel from all their sins, I should say. So it's about sin. So when I'm calling out from this depth, I think the thing that strikes me about this is it's a depth that I've made. It's a depth that I have created, typically speaking. So
That's the first word that kind of pops to me too, is this depths. And you're a Hebrew nerd guy, and so you'll appreciate this. But this is, you know, marama. This is the depths of Sheol. This is this is the pit, right? This is where souls go when they die. So this isn't like I'm down in the doldrums today. I'm not feeling it, and it can be, but it's not just a valley that you're walking through. You know, this is drawing on really theologically significant language to the Hebrew people. This is "out of the depths of hell I cry to you."
Yes.
And there's this kind of added tension that comes with that, right? This seems like the unreachable place. Like if you've ended up there because of your iniquities, you deserve it. You've earned it.
Yes.
This is where you're meant to be. And out of those depths, they cry to the Lord.
Right.
Hear my voice. You know, this is the call, you know, when you go forward into the New Testament, right? The one who is in the depths of the fire and calling out to Lazarus to say, will you hear me? Will you put in a word for me? And you know, will you intercede for me? And so that's out of those depths that someone is calling for the Lord to forgive them.
It's true. The picture of an insurmountable, whatever depth that there's you're not getting out. That you're not getting out on your own. You're not getting out.
Yeah.
And I love that. It makes me think of Jonah, actually, kind of in the belly of the whale, like, or the fish, whatever it was. Is just to sit there and say, "Well, I'm going to pray." You know, see how this goes.
What else am I going to do down here?
Let's try praying.
Can't get the internet down here.
Running didn't work so well. Let's try praying. So the other thing, along with that, and there's so much we could talk about here, but the other thing, as they're asking for God to be attentive, the phrase that if you kept a record of sins, who could stand? But with you there's forgiveness. And I'd love to ask different theologians about this, because that word "feared" is always such a striking word, and it, and I think it's just a terrible thing to try to translate into English.
Yeah.
For me, when I look at feared, I kind of try to think of it as slack jawed awe. Mm. Like, just, I can't believe this is beyond my understanding. And it could be, it's so good, it could be, it's so bad. But when you think of that word feared, you know, what is it that comes to mind, or what are some of your ways of dealing with that or processing that word?
I think my dad.
Okay.
I can't help but go immediately there, because y'all can't see this on the other end of this conversation, but I'm just a slight guy. No one would be intimidated by me in the streets, but my dad is the physical opposite of me.
He's
a big man, naturally large and muscular, thick. With a mustache that impresses, and you know, he's always been that way. And I watched him stand up on behalf of our family against people. I've seen him intimidate with his size before.
Okay.
I have seen him strike fear in other people.
Right.
And I always had a healthy respect for that.
Yeah.
But he's also the softest, kindest, most gospel filled father I could have ever imagined.
Okay.
And so when he was angry at me,
yes,
I feared it.
You feared it. Yep.
But he would always, there was a beat, there was a moment, and then he would come and he would tell me that he forgives me.
Oh.
And he would pronounce that over me every time. And he did the opposite too. He would ask my forgiveness.
Well, that's a real man of God right there.
Yeah, he is. But he scared me sometimes. So, there's probably some theological interpretations in there, but my dad just, you know, made me almost pee my pants sometimes.
Well,
so,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Yeah. When his forgiveness came, it meant something.
That's something that'll preach.
Yeah.
The forgiveness came, it meant something. I was struck a few weeks ago in the Psalms. There was a Psalm, and it was kind of like, you know, God's mercy means so much because he has every right and every ability to be the opposite of merciful.
Yeah.
But because he has that ability and doesn't use it on us, he took out that punishment on his own son instead of us. That is just makes it all the more remarkable.
Yeah, man, and that's a full circle moment for me, because when you say that, like, again, out of the depths of Sheol, again, you didn't end up there, you know, by happenstance. You've earned it. He has every right to not listen,
yeah,
to not listen to this cry, to not hear your voice. And yet this is a God that says, I will, so much that there's a song for us to sing to remember it.
Oh, yes.
And how lovely is that? Again, he is to be feared. The depths of Sheol are the depths of Sheol, and we can earn and we can work for that. And we can end up in those places, but we can then also call to him for forgiveness.
I love that so much. I think kind of leads me just to end at the last little bit here when it says, he himself will redeem Israel from all their sins, and it's he himself is going to do it. And so that redemption comes from him. And for me, I think one of the points to take from the Psalm is, it's not that God says, like, what's the old Italian phrase, forget about it when it comes to your sins, you know, like, don't worry about it, or it's okay. No, your sin's not okay, but he's going to redeem us. He's going to take care of it. And of course we see that in its fullness in Christ. So, yeah. Oh man. Well, Ken, I got to tell you, thanks so much for being part of this and for recording. I've had so much fun with you and with Paul.
Likewise.
Just hanging out this week has been just marvelous, and I'm learning a ton from your presentation. So,
likewise, and shout out to Park Ridge. I've never had the honor and opportunity to be out in those parts, but maybe one day I'll get out there.
Well, in between your trips to Indonesia and Mexico City and Istanbul and everywhere else at Park Ridge, we'd love to have you.
Get to the real exotic places.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Sounds good. Hey, thanks so much, Park Ridge. We'll see you soon.